association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth's series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. Hi, everyone. Maren here today with a special but not new guest. Super excited to have Lisa Gillespie with me again. Now, for those of you that don't know, Lisa is a cranial sacral therapist and a restorative exercise specialist. Now, there's also a lot more to her bio besides being a wonderful and amazing person. So she will link you to her website probably after we speak. But Lisa did a podcast with me, gosh, I don't know, what was that, a year ago or maybe a year ago already? And that was our first sort of real life interaction. I had seen lots of Lisa's work online and just been really intrigued by the way she can answer questions and teach. So we talked about alignment in pregnancy a year ago. So you can find that podcast on the podcast archives. Lisa also came to Sedona this year in January for our IndieBirth conference and did an amazing session for midwives on a similar topic of alignment in pregnancy. So we wanted to just continue and I think really add another piece to this information and puzzle that people are seeking. So we're going to talk about the postpartum period today and Lisa's perspective on movement. So welcome, Lisa. I'm so glad to have you back.
Thank you so much. Thanks. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah, we're so lucky we get to work on things like this together.
Yes, absolutely.
So I thought we'd just kind of start at the beginning. I think lots of questions will come up. I know you always have things I haven't even thought about to cover. So, you know, you just go ahead and talk about those things. Sure. But I think we'll agree and, you know, sharing with our audience here that Lisa and I, you know, we see each other on Facebook. We're in lots of the same groups. And I feel like lots of people lately in particular have been asking about how to handle their bodies in the postpartum period. You know, there's more information than ever before. Things like belly binding, I really want to talk about that. So there's lots of things that I think we've done in the past that are now being questioned. And Lisa is a great person to give us more information as we question them. So if we just start at the beginning, you know, someone's just had a baby, they've just birthed. And from your perspective, Lisa, what is someone concerned about or not as far as physical recovery, just in this initial postpartum stage?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's typically concern or questions about pelvic floor and healing pelvic floor. And some women may notice that they may have difficulty emptying their bladder completely, or they may have difficulty, they may notice they've got some incontinence. They may feel sense of pressure. I had a client recently and she self-diagnosed herself with cystocele, which is a prolapsed bladder. So her bladder was actually moving external out of her vagina, so she could feel it there. So there was concern, understandably, about that. And I think there's a lot of question about what is normal and what is not normal and when to seek assistance. I think women in general are notoriously poor at self-care. Right. And that the more proactive we can be about things, the better off we are in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, those first couple of weeks are so overwhelming in every way. You know, I know I've thought to myself that maybe something feels a little different or out of place, but how long do I give it? You know, when your body is really going through so much change in those first couple months, even.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we've got hormone levels adjusting. We have position of the uterus, the size of the uterus changing shape. We have the ligaments that support the uterus that have stretched in this amazing, incredible way to support a growing uterus, and now they're needing to return to a smaller size. We have organs that have been displaced upward towards the diaphragm that are now shifting back down to their normal position, like the intestines. Mm-hmm. We have pelvic floor organs that are now less squeezed and now have more space that the baby has been birthed. So there's a lot of change that is happening. And I think we also have this myth that 6 weeks is the magical mark where women are cleared for normal activity, they're cleared for sexual activity, they're cleared to return to working out. And that may or may not be appropriate right. for an individual woman. And that really is something that needs to be considered on a case-by-case basis in terms of what was someone's pregnancy like? What was someone's birth like? How are they feeling right now? What kind of support do they have? Are they having to take care of other kids and take care of a household much earlier than would be ideal? And are they having to be lifting small children in addition to taking care of a newborn and breastfeeding and all of those things going on? And then we have sleep deprivation. And so there's a lot of healing that is occurring, and we have to consider how supportive is the environment of that healing. And if we have an environment that isn't really supportive, and a mom who doesn't have a lot of support, and you know, maybe a partner had to return to work after a week, which is pretty typical, unfortunately. And maybe they don't have family or friends who can help out, then we have to really, I think, tone things down a lot. And just those activities are plenty, if not more, than what ideally should be happening with a woman postpartum.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true, right? I mean, on one hand, we're talking about how to recover and if there are things we should actually do, but then we're already doing so much just mm-hmm. being alive, hopefully, yeah. with, you know, a postpartum new baby and, like you're saying, all these circumstances that really people don't consider. So, you know, what do you think is the simplest way, you know, if someone hasn't been doing alignment stuff throughout their pregnancy, they're just listening to this now, maybe they've just had a baby, what are mm-hmm. some simple things to look for or start doing without adding to the overwhelm?
Yeah, absolutely. I think two things that I encourage moms to do postpartum is to be mindful of how they are holding their baby. And we have, in those early days, so much holding that's going on, and perhaps bouncing, and, you know, lots of in arms, upper body work. And it's really, really easy to return to the habits we had in pregnancy, and most likely the habits that we had prior to pregnancy, where we carry the pelvis forward over the front of the feet, and we carry the torso, the shoulders, back behind the pelvis. So if you think about kind of that stereotypical pregnancy posture with the belly way out in front, the mm-hmm. pelvis way out in front, and the shoulders way out in back, we tend to carry that with us into our baby holding time because most of us are pretty weak in our arms and upper body. And so having the pelvis forward and the shoulders back lets us kind of use our torso as a bit of a shelf to support the baby. Yeah. The problem with that is it's really stressing certain areas of the body, such as the low back area. We're putting the low back in a pressed position, when we're doing that hour after hour, day in and day out, we're also putting the core musculature in a really compromised position. So if we have a woman who is developed diastasis recti during her pregnancy, where the two halves of the abdominal muscles that run down the center of the core, the rectus abdominis, depending on a variety of things, those muscles can separate at the midline, and the connective tissue that connects the two halves can develop a gap, essentially. Right. And so when that occurs, we want to do as much as we can to support the healing of that. And having the pelvis thrust forward and the shoulders back can contribute to that separation and can also prevent the ability of the core to be able to fire well and respond in a supportive way to the demands being placed upon it. So we kind of lose access to our core musculature in that position. So if instead we can back the pelvis up and bring the shoulders, stack the shoulders over the pelvis, and actually relax the front of the rib cage down, which it will feel slumpy to most of us,
right,
like you've got bad posture. We're actually setting ourselves up. We're helping our back be in a much better position, and we're helping our core muscles be in a position where they can start to work and respond to the demands being placed upon it. So that's one thing, is to just be mindful of when you're standing, can you back your pelvis up and bring your shoulders over your pelvis? And then the other thing, you know, for most of us in those early days, we're spending a lot of time sitting and a lot of time nursing. And And I know this is going to vary depending on the baby and depending on how you need to position yourself to breastfeed. And I know in those early days, sometimes moms have to be in some kind of convoluted positions as they're working on that breastfeeding relationship. So I'm just going to put that caveat of course, you have to do what you have to do. And if it's possible to sit more on the base of your pelvis rather than tucked under and sitting on the bottom of your spine and the back of your pelvis,
right,
that will be really helpful for your back and your pelvic floor. And, you know I logged a ton of hours in one of those glider chairs before I knew anything about anything. And I remember how sore my tailbone got because I'm sitting with this really tucked pelvis for hour after hour. So if you put like a little pillow behind your low back, that can help you sit more on the base of your pelvis. If you nurse on the floor with something behind your back versus the couch, because the couch cushion is just so mushy and it really invites a lot of tucking of the pelvis, the more you can be on a firm surface, the more helpful that is for getting untucked and sitting on the base of the pelvis. And, you know, it doesn't have to be something that people get really rigid and uptight about, because Lord knows we don't need anything else to get uptight about. So if you just maybe break it up, and instead of doing all of your nursing in a glider or recliner or the couch, maybe you can do a little bit seated on the floor and more up on the base of your pelvis. So you're just, you're doing what you can,
right,
and you're working with the situation at hand, which is demanding.
Right.
And you're just, you know, every little bit is helpful to our bodies. And I think it's easy to forget that and to think kind of like, oh man, I'm not doing this 100% of the time, and I'm not doing all the things that I should be doing, so therefore I've totally screwed myself up. But I think it's so important to remember every little bit helps,
right,
and we are all works in progress. bodies are pretty amazing in their capacity to heal. So, I encourage people to really be gentle with themselves about this and do what you can and realize that you're doing your best.
Yeah, totally. I think the awareness and the education, like you're also agreeing, is a great thing. You know, I just think of that classic mom postpartum, and I've certainly been her too, that, you know, we tell women to rest and all of that. So they're sitting in bed and just like you said, mm-hmm. how sore you are. And that's often one of the most common complaints, I'd say, like 3 days postpartum, is women aren't really up to doing too much, but they're sick of sitting in bed. So mm-hmm. just having some encouragement of, like you're saying, different positions to make their bodies feel a little better as they are recovering.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what about, you know, more on nursing, just because when I think of all those hours nursing a new baby, my neck just hurts thinking about it.
Yes.
Yes. Help with that.
So I think, and I remember my wrists killing me too from positioning the head. So yeah, anything, in my cranial sacral practice, I actually work with a number of babies who are having feeding difficulties and tongue tie in particular. So one of the things I see moms not doing, and I know I did this as well, is we don't want to mess with using pillows and things to support ourselves because it's kind of a hassle to get everything arranged. So we tend to just kind of grind it out. And the more support we can offer our upper body, and especially the more we can get the baby up to nipple level so that we're not having to look down as much, is going to be really helpful. Now, you're still going to be looking down probably more than you're used to. So things that can help counteract that are when you're able to shift positions, whether that's side-lying nursing or able to nurse with the baby lying across your chest so you're lying down, or there are even some laid-back nursing positions that are a little less looking down at the baby. I think all of those can add some variety and give your neck a little bit of a break. But things, you know, just some gentle stretches of lying on the floor, even with your baby on your chest, and just opening your arms out to the side.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're going to do a snow angel kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can vary the angle of the arms so you can just change a little bit of the stretch that's going on through the chest and counteract all of that forward positioning that is so intense during motherhood. And then also for the neck, doing some little ear to shoulder breaks to gently stretch the sides of the neck. And that's pretty easy to do while you're nursing. If once things get established and you're not having to work quite so hard.
Sure.
So, yeah, I would say varying nursing positions if you're able to. I know for some babies, especially in the beginning, there's only one position that will work. So you do what you have to do. But as you're able to, if you can vary the position, and then if you can do some just gentle stretches. And I think it also, that looking down becomes more of a habit than it may be actually necessary.
Right.
So if you can consider that and just see if you can maybe vary it, and then opening the chest, giving yourself some breaks just on the floor to help stretch out those arm and chest muscles that are working so hard.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, little bits at a time sounds like the good rule of thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Exactly.
Cool. Exactly. Well, I mentioned I really want to talk about belly binding.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I think most people are aware. We can explain what that is, or maybe you can, but even just from a cultural perspective, you know, I think many cultures have done that, maybe continue. I know I certainly learned about it to a limited extent as an apprentice, and it was something we were taught to do. I feel like there's a whole new wave, in a sense, of exuberance or for belly binding. You know, maybe it's women wanting to close that diastasis recti, like you said. And I know I've tried it. I've certainly done that in my last couple of postpartums. I can't say that it did anything or didn't do anything, but I really want to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah. So I think we've got a couple approaches or perspectives that are feeding into the belly binding. We've got, as you mentioned, looking at other cultures and their postpartum period and how they traditionally have supported moms during that time. And then we also have women who are looking to heal their diastasis recti, who are looking, and especially in our U.S. culture, where God forbid you have a belly, we're really looking to return back to our quote-unquote normal shape as quickly as possible. Mamas who've had a C-section may have heard that belly binding can help support things as their incision is healing and that type of thing. But I think we also have to really take into consideration a few things when we're looking at modeling our postpartum time after different indigenous cultures and their history. I think we have to keep in mind that we are not them, right, and that our lifestyle is very different than what that tradition grew out of. And something as simple as you have a culture that traditionally moved a whole lot more than we move. They have a completely different relationship with their core musculature than most of us living modern Western lives do. They gathered, they planted, they moved in ways to prepare their food that we do not do, most of us, in our lives. So they're coming to this postpartum period with very different physical experiences behind them than what we as a Western culture take into our postpartum experiences. And I think we also have to take into consideration, not just is belly binding good or bad, because I think that's a pretty overly simplistic thing, and, right, and with most cases, it depends. But we also have to take into consideration, not just should I belly bind or should I not belly bind, but are we comparing apples to apples? How much time are we talking about belly binding and not just like for how long a period over weeks or days, but how many hours during a day are we talking about belly binding? Are we talking about, and what type of belly binding are we talking about? Because there are things, something was shared in a group I belong to, a link to a product on Amazon that just kind of made me shudder to look at it. And it had all these straps and Velcro and essentially part of the description was a girdle. And and I was really quite horrified that people are thinking that is a good thing. Right. And so those are things that we have to take into consideration. The other really important thing for people to be mindful of is if you consider your trunk as kind of a, let's say a can, like a soda can, and we have the top of the can is the diaphragm muscle, and the bottom of the can is the pelvic floor musculature, and then the front of the can is the abdominal muscles that wrap around to the sides as well, and then the back of the can is the back musculature. Now, obviously, our bodies are not rigid like a metal can. So if you take that material and kind of make it more balloon-like than can-like, that will give you a better indication. But if we're strapping something around the middle or placing material around the middle that places pressure on that middle area, the organs that were distended forward are now being pushed in to a greater or lesser extent, depending on the binding that's occurring. And we have to consider what happens to those, because it's not just a matter of now everything magically shrank. We have this container of space that's now being asked to contain more in the same amount of space. Right. So something has to go somewhere. And what happens is we have things being displaced upward towards right. the diaphragm, and we have things being displaced downward towards the pelvic floor.
Right.
And if a woman is dealing with any type of prolapse issue, whether that's bladder prolapse or rectum prolapse or uterine prolapse or even intestinal prolapse, or they're dealing with pressure on the pelvic floor and maybe they don't have an official diagnosis of prolapse, but they have some prolapse symptoms,
right.
or they're having incontinence, do we really want to be increasing the pressure going downward?
Right.
And I don't know, you know, there is concern among women's health physical therapists that and this actually came up recently in a group that I belong to where they were talking about, you know, if a woman has any type of symptom of prolapse, the recommendation from many of the women's health physical therapists who chimed in was absolutely do not do belly binding.
Right.
Just because of there's no way to belly bind without increasing the intra-abdominal pressure.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We also have to consider digestion and things like hiatal hernia is part of that whole upward pressure towards the diaphragm. So these are things that I think a lot of people don't take into consideration. We're just thinking, oh, this is what other cultures have done, so it must be a good thing.
Right.
But I do know that for some women who have a really large diastasis, that having that kind of material or something to offer a little bit of support can feel really helpful and really reassuring.
Right.
And there was even something I read recently, and I had a client mention this, that they have found that doing belly binding can help with depression. And I had a client who found that to be the case for her. And I don't know the mechanics behind it, but it was curious to me. They were kind of looking at different cases in which belly binding might be of benefit to people. And from a physical, mental, emotional standpoint. And I know that having a large diastasis can be really disconcerting, and there's this sense of lack of stability, and there's a lot more to it than something as simple as the abdominal right. muscles separated. So, not to say that there isn't a time and a place for it, I just think we have to be really mindful and not, as with pretty much everything, not sure. do a blanket prescription
sure.
for it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, like I said, I've done it, but I remember asking myself questions, you know, just how much is too much? You know, mm-hmm. does one wear this overnight? Because there definitely right. is less intellectual information out there. You know, yeah. there's tons of products and all kinds of things, all kinds of programs that women could get on for closing that diastasis simply by wearing something. So I wasn't doing that. But again, I was just questioning the limits of right. what this actually meant. And, you know, I didn't have those answers. I just kind of figured them out for myself, but it comes up mm-hmm. a lot if, you know, what people are thinking about these things. So that makes perfect sense. And I think that's a really great explanation. And now people can kind of take that and do what they will with it.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to mention too with that is when we have something acting in lieu of our core musculature, our core is not having to do its job. And sometimes that can be helpful, but over the long run, it will further compromise the strength of the core. And that's been another concern that has been raised by different physical therapists, is that if we're wanting to restore function and strength to the core, why would we essentially cast that area and immobilize it so that right. it's not able to be used? And so I think, you know, it's certainly not a matter of belly bind or go and do your core boot camp workout, but
let's hope not.
Yeah.
Yeah. There has to be
stories I've heard though.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, and that's part of, I think, this whole discussion, like you're saying, even down to perhaps depression being lifted with such a thing, because we really want culturally to feel like we're back together and,
yeah.
you know, we're strong and we don't have bellies anymore. So again, culturally, I think we are going to great extents to make people feel like that's happening. Mm-hmm. When of course it's a very slow and gradual process, like any sort of recovery.
Right.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, I think, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I wanted to talk a little bit about baby wearing, because I feel mm-hmm. like there's sort of a similar issue there. And mm-hmm. I'll just say for me that I've certainly worn my babies, but in the last couple of babies, the more I've learned about this sort of thing, I began to question it. There are wraps and, you know, all these things, but some that feel better than others. And I've just never enjoyed a whole lot of them either. Like, they hurt mm-hmm. here, they hurt there. So I just want to talk about that, since baby wearing is quite a thing as well.
Yes, it is a thing. And many women are really passionate about it, and at the risk of rocking that boat.
Hey, we like to rock boats over here. What are you talking about?
That's right. This is an universe.
No, it's no offense to anybody. I mean, the wrap industry, the baby wearing industry is a huge industry. I'm sure it will continue to thrive yes. despite our conversation.
And I think, you know, baby wearing can be just such a wonderful, lovely thing. And again, it's something that people will look at and say, oh, you know, culturally, this has been done for forever. And yes, I agree. However, again, you know, when we look at the belly wrapping, just baby wearing is done culturally in a very different context than how we Westerners tend to do it. And we tend to do it here so that we can free up our hands to be able to type on a computer or prep dinner or do dishes and those types of things that are all really right in front of us and fairly minimal activity to a certain extent.
Sure.
And so we also were taking into our baby wearing process the same body that we took into our pregnancy that we now take into our postpartum period. And if we have a body that, as with all bodies, we have certain strength deficits, we have certain mobility deficits, we have certain habits of moving and of not moving that can help or hinder the function and health of our body. And one of the big things that I see with baby wearing is that habit that I talked about earlier of carrying the pelvis forward and carrying the shoulders back.
Right.
And even though we have this contraption that is connected to our torso, we take that habit into our baby wearing experience quite frequently, and it doesn't help us. And it's also how a baby moves when they're in a wrap is very different than how a baby moves when they're in arms. And it's not to say that baby wearing is bad, but I think we need to mix it up and we need to have variety. And just like when we sit in a chair, for most of us, the chair is doing the work of supporting us. When we're wearing a baby, the wrap is doing a lot of the work of supporting a baby. So there's not a lot of active participation that a baby needs to do. I won't say there isn't any,
right. But
it's a different quantity than if a baby is being carried in arms and having to participate to maybe hang on a little bit with their legs or grasp a little bit more with their arms. That's a much more interactive and active process for a baby's development as well. So I think, and the other thing too, when we're baby wearing, we tend to, I know some people have a lot of different carriers and slings, right. So they can mix it up, but you know, we tend to wear a baby in a pretty similar position.
Sure.
You know, the ring sling tends to be over the one shoulder and not the other shoulder. So all of this is going to be show up in our habits, and we tend to reinforce our strengths. So when my daughter was young, I tended to carry her in my left arm, and right. She had her head turned to look over my shoulder, turned to her right. So that freed up my right arm, because I'm right-handed, to do all the things that I needed to do. And that carries over into our baby wearing. How we wear a baby is often to our strength, whether that's more on one side or the other side, or it's supporting the baby with one arm more than another arm.
Sure, sure.
And so we have to also look at how that is helping or hindering our body and how our baby is responding to that, because we're this dynamic duo in this baby wearing and baby carrying in this postpartum time.
Yeah.
The other thing too, last but not least, is depending on the carrier and how it sits, there is some concern about the strap, the lower strap, creating intra-abdominal pressure. So
I feel like I felt that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there have been some women who have noticed an increase in prolapse symptoms or even just pelvic floor pressure when they're wearing their baby compared to when they are carrying their baby in arms. And that has kind of puzzled them. But when we think about just the mechanics of how a wrap or carrier is on the body, it might make a little sense that we've got things strapped around us that are putting pressure on different areas of our body.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I know they're adjustable. I mean, I've worn many wraps and slings too, but I will say, as a shorter person, I think that's part of the reason I've just never found one I absolutely couldn't live without, because I just can't wear them for very long before I start feeling that. So it's like a new but old idea, I think, to start carrying your baby more. And I get why people don't, you know, we all get tired and we have other kids and we're going into the store. But I know with my last baby, I tried that more, just kind of carrying around like a sack of potatoes, you know, wherever I went. And it's obvious, is what you said, her strength was better. Her head and neck strength was better.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's lazier now that she's over two. I'll be like, come on, kid, get those legs up. What's wrong with you? You can't hold on to me anymore. But you do. You see with an older child really how you've babied them to this extent that they can't actually hold on to your body.
Right.
And it's really weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. I know my alignment mentor, Katie Bowman, talked about with her daughter, her youngest, she would carry her in arms as much as she could when she was awake, and then she would use a carrier when she was sleeping. Mm. And so that's how they worked that out. Now, not everybody's Katie Bowman by any means, so we got to do what works for us and our lives. And I think there's also a lot of concern from people as they start to learn more about alignment and movement and how our body is impacted about that by that. There's concern about strollers and that type of thing, and oh gosh, I should never use a stroller. But I've had some moms with such prolapse symptoms that
right.
wearing their baby and or carrying their baby in their arms, as the baby got heavier and grew more, their arm strength was just not able to keep up with it. So they were compromising in certain ways and bearing down and holding their breath somewhat to kind of offer some stability. And that was increasing their pelvic floor symptoms. So I think in that case, is a stroller ideal? No, but neither is blowing out your pelvic floor organs. So totally. I think we got to work with the situation at hand. And for some women, using a stroller is going to be part of their recovery and part of their parenting for longer or shorter period of time, depending on each individual situation.
Right. Yeah, of course. And I think that's always a great reminder. You know, there's never one way to do things. And it's just posing these questions that I think when people haven't thought about them at all, but you're right. There's so many unique factors that go into how someone should or could decide how to do any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes me think we'll have to do a toddler episode or a young kid episode at some point, because we can't possibly talk about how to transition the kid from the stroller to walking. So that's for next time. Oh man. But I had another question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we already kind of hit on a little bit, at least, incontinence and prolapse. And I would say as a midwife too, those are things you hear more often than not in the postpartum mm-hmm. period as far as complaints. What other really common complaints do you hear about in your practice that you're able to help people with? I think that would be good for them to know, because, you know, often women just don't know where to go to help find mm-hmm. answers to these things mm-hmm. that are bothering them.
Yeah. So incontinence and prolapse are definitely
as if that's not enough.
Yeah. but diastasis recti is another big one. And often diastasis and pelvic organ prolapse go together
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the things that set you up for one of those situations sets you up for the other situation. And then I think what surprised me the most after I had my daughter was how physical taking care of a child was. It just mm-hmm. blew me away. I mean, my feet killed me. I was just spending so much time standing and bouncing, and I'd get up in the morning and my feet just felt like somebody had beaten them with a hammer. And the neck, as you mentioned, you're looking down all the time, and your wrists, because you're carrying in ways that you've never done that before. And you're sitting in all these weird angles, and you're sitting for extended periods of time because the baby finally fell asleep and you don't want to move because you're yeah. finally getting your break. So just the kind of those general aches and pains of back pain can be a really common thing that women will have during pregnancy, and we consider it, oh, it's just, you know, the normal back pain that pregnant women get. And for many women, it resolves once they have their baby. However, there is a percentage of women for whom it does not resolve. And the same with pelvic girdle pain and discomfort or sacroiliac joint issues, that we tend to think of those as, you know, just part of normal pregnancy aches and pains, which they are not. They're common, but they're not mm-hmm. normal for pregnancy. And so we can also carry that into the postpartum period. And there's a lot that can be done to relieve that and to help prevent that. And I think that's one of the things that I would love to really drive home more, is that realization that the body we take into pregnancy is the body that we will have postpartum,
right,
to a large extent. And ideally, in my perfect world, the time to address and prevent all of this, because prevention is so much easier than addressing it after it's occurred, is prior to pregnancy. But, you know, that's in my perfect world, and that is not the reality for many women. Right. I'll get a phone call at 36 weeks, and now I can't walk because my pelvis is in such severe pain, and how am I going to give birth? And it's like, yeah, I wish we could have dealt with this like, mm-hmm. 20 weeks ago. Yeah, there is a lot that can be done for those common aches and pains. And I think what gets particularly challenged is just for women to be willing to make the time mm-hmm. to help themselves and to get that addressed. You know, there's kind of this black hole of time in those first, I would say, 2 years of raising a child where, for most of us, our self-care kind of goes on the back burner.
Right.
And we might squeeze in the occasional chiropractic adjustment, but anything beyond that just is understandably feels like overwhelm. And I think if we can just do some little things like what we've been talking about today, even that can go a long way towards helping women recover. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say, you know, the biggies of prolapse, incontinence, diastasis recti, back pain and pelvic pain, those are the biggies that I see and find that can benefit from this work in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And you do have a free webinar of alignment in pregnancy, correct? Is mm-hmm. that still available?
Yeah, it okay. is. And what I'll do, Maren, is, I just thought probably the easiest thing is to put together a handout for people with links to the different resources that I have so that yeah. things are all in one place for them. And I'll put that on my website, which is lisallc.com. And if you do a / IndieBirth, all one word, - postpartum, you'll see, you'll be able to access the PDF there. And I think that'll just be the easiest way to put everything in one location.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. You are so organized like that. And it's really, that helps with the overwhelm, I think, for people listening that just want to see some concrete tips or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Great. Anything else you want to share or remind people of or offer, whatever you want?
Yeah, I think I'll just include those resources. I also have a free mini course. It's a 5-part mini course. It's actually 6 parts, but officially it's 5 parts. And that walks through, it's some short videos that walks people through some of these things that we've been talking about, like backing the pelvis up and stacking the torso over the pelvis, and even something as simple as focusing on having the feet facing forward rather than turning them out changes how the musculature in the hips is positioned, or not really positioned because it's still in the same place, but the length of the muscles and how those muscles are being recruited changes depending upon the position of our feet. And so having the feet facing forward rather than turning them out can be really helpful for pelvic and hip issues, even pelvic floor issues, because some of those hip muscles also participate with the pelvic floor. So that's another simple change. I know that when my daughter, I think by the time she was about 6 months, I had had two pretty severe back spasms. Mm. And I think it was just a confluence of events that happened as a result of having a C-section, having a weak core to begin with, having habits that didn't serve me well, and in particular, that carrying my pelvis forward and having my shoulders back. One of the things I noticed, I mean, this is kind of a funny aside, but I noticed, I don't know how long after having my daughter, but I remember looking in the mirror, I was wearing my underwear, I looked in the mirror and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have totally lost my butt. Like, I have no butt anymore. My mom won't listen to this, so I can say this. I told my husband, I was like, oh my gosh, my butt looks like my mom. Yeah, you're right. I'm like, how did that happen?
Oh, that's funny.
And what I know now is all of that carrying my pelvis forward and kind of tucking my pelvis under meant that I was using my glute muscles totally differently, and that actually I was using them much less than when I had my pelvis backed up and was actually using my glutes to help support my pelvis. And I did have incontinence issues postpartum, but I just thought, oh, you know,
it's normal.
Doesn't every woman do have this?
And yeah,
it's like, wow, you know, I thought since I had a C-section that this wouldn't be an issue, but I guess, you know, it still impacts women even who haven't birthed vaginally. So, it's really interesting for me to just notice how clueless I was and how much I just took for granted as being a normal part of motherhood. And even I remember lifting my head up, lying down on the floor and feeling that gully down the front of my core and being kind of curious, like, oh, well, that's interesting. And I'd never heard of diastasis recti before. And it wasn't till quite a bit later that I heard of it and realized that I had a mild case of it. But it was quite interesting to me as I started implementing the alignment work and as I was studying it and practicing it, how much that changed for me personally. Mm. And as I said, I had a pretty mild case of it. So that was certainly helpful. But it lasted quite a bit. Like, you know, I think my daughter was 2 or 3, mm-hmm. and I still had that. It hadn't changed at all until I started making some changes with my alignment. So I've certainly learned quite a bit on my own journey of motherhood and postpartum. And
yeah.
I think that it really has helped me have a greater appreciation for where we are all, or not all, but where a lot of us are coming from as we enter this strange new postpartum land and are working to find our way.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you. I agree. I think the way you simplify things that, you know, so that people can understand is really helpful. I know it's not a simple science by any means, mm-hmm. but you make it accessible, which again, when we're dealing with being overwhelmed and exhausted and just feeling like there's one more thing to do when you have a new baby, that's mm-hmm. really helpful. So thank you so much. You're awesome.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that wonderful link that will help people get some more concrete information. And again, you can contact Lisa at mm-hmm. lisallc.com.
Yep.
And as for me, check out the new Indie Birth Midwifery School website, indiebirthmidwiferyschool.com, and check the Indie Birth site just for updates and new upcoming events. So thanks so much, everybody. Have a great day.